Welcome back to the Now Age podcast with me, Ruby Warrington. This week's guest is Minerva Siegel, who's on Instagram as Spooky Fat Babe. Minerva is a plus-size and fat-positive model, poet, and soon-to-be author. Since we recorded this episode, she's signed a book deal with Simon & Schuster. Minerva was actually the first person I interviewed for this podcast. We began chatting after I shared some of her amazing images on Instagram, and I found her story to be very compelling. Not only is Minerva fat and proud, she is also autistic and lives with multiple chronic health issues, which she shares more about in our interview. All of this has led to her being a vocal spokesperson for inclusivity, particularly in spiritual and hashtag wellness communities, where she believes fat phobia, ableism, and transphobia are rife, and where she has often felt marginalized despite having found her own spiritual practice to be deeply healing on many different levels. Earlier in 2018, I had a situation where I was schooled on my thin privilege, a term I had never heard before, and it was a situation that really helped me understand how the fat phobia that exists everywhere in our society was actually at the root of my own body image issues. This made me realize even more how important the work of people like Minerva is, and I wanted to talk to her about this in more depth. I really love her fierce yet compassionate approach to addressing this and the other issues that she speaks about in her work, which really comes across in our interview. In this episode, we also discuss Minerva's mission to create intersectionality among spiritual communities, her journey to claiming the word witch for herself, despite major pushback from her family, the danger of correlating health or basic biology with divinity and high vibes, her practice for overcoming her own fat phobia and accepting herself and her body, how to call out non-inclusive behavior in a helpful and loving way. And finally, I love this, the concept of shadow work as self-care and how we can approach this in our own lives. It really is such a lovely conversation. Minerva is a joy to speak to, and I hope you enjoy meeting her as much as I did. Hello, Minerva, aka Spooky Fat Babe. Thank you so much for joining me for this chat today. It's great to kind of meet you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. It's nice to meet you too.
So we kind of officially met, I suppose, as pretty much the whole world seems to do these days on Instagram, of course, because that's where we also live most of our lives.
Isn't that the truth?
And the first question, you might have shared this in a post or somewhere, but I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And I need to know, what is your astro profile?
Oh, geez. Well, I'm a Sagittarius sun. A Capricorn moon, and my rising is Cancer.
Ah, so quite a mix of the elements there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a whole lot of Cancer in my, Capricorn in my chart. It comes up 8 times actually. And I've got 6 astro bodies in the 6th house. So my chart's kind of crazy.
Wow. So then this, and we'll get to this in a little, in my sort of like next question in a way, but that immediately says to me, here's a woman who's on a mission. It's like there's the Capricorn kind of, mm-hmm. I have a mission and I know what it is. And then the 6th house kind of work ethic to actually really put it into action.
Yeah, I really, I think my mission is just to help empower people in an intersectional way and to just try to let people find their voice and inspire them to find their own voice and stand up for themselves and who they really are.
I definitely want to get super deep into all of that. But also I really need to know, I think beyond the beautiful imagery on your Instagram feed that I just found really captivating from the get-go. It's so kind of glamorous and yet so real at the same time. I really, really, really love your handle. And I would love to hear the story of how you came up with, how you came up with and how you became Spooky Fat Babe.
Oh, geez. Well, actually, I started my Instagram just after I was diagnosed with a rare bone disease. I had a wrist fusion operation that it has a year-long heal time. So I had to give up my career and I found myself with a lot of downtime. So I was like, well, I guess I'll start an Instagram. That's what all the kids are doing these days. And I couldn't think of anything. So I think Spooky Fat Babe was just the first thing I plugged in that was available. I definitely wasn't expecting it to get big or anything. I probably would have chosen something a little more carefully if I would have known that I was going to have 60,000 followers one day. But yeah, Spooky Fat Babe. I think it still resonates with me though, even after, like, I think I've had my Instagram for about 3 years, two or three. And yeah, it's just, it captures the witchy part of me and obviously my fat positivity. And yeah, I like it. It represents me still.
It's beautiful. And I'm actually all one for kind of like following that first intuitive hit. And I love the fact that, you know, when we do to an extent, you really get to kind of like choose and shape our own identities in the internet age. And I think that picking those kind of denominators that just speak to you in the instance is like, yeah, I'm a spooky fat babe, you know, that's just, and I think it's possibly not the reason why your account is so popular. There are many reasons for that, but I think that they're just kind of, there's a raw kind of like honesty and realness about it that's also cute and playful. And so, yeah, I just wanted to throw out an extra compliment on your
brain. Oh, that's amazing. Thank you. I try to keep it real always. I think that's so easy to become so false. Like you said, you know, it's so easy to curate your life so carefully on Instagram and social media in general. And I think it's really important to consciously try to keep it real and post those, you know, makeup-less selfies and those, you know, bad day selfies and everything, and just let people know that, you know, life isn't always glamorous and that's okay.
Absolutely, 100%. So then let's get deeper into this mission that you have obviously come to this earth with, in this being that you inhabit now, you know? Mm-hmm. When we kind of like touched base about it before this call, you described your mission as being to cultivate conscientious intersectionality within spiritual communities particularly. Mm-hmm. And I'd love if you could just unpack that a little bit for me. Like, what exactly do you mean by that? And how did you come to it? And why you? Like, why is this your mission? So that's, I guess, a three-part question.
Well, intersectionality is really important to me. I exist at a lot of intersections. I'm child-free, I'm disabled, you know, I'm fat. And I just think it's really important to represent, or like to help represent marginalized people in general. So within spiritual communities specifically, I've seen a lot of trans misogyny, a lot of ableism, cultural appropriation. And I try to call bullshit on that whenever possible. I think it's really important to. One of my best friends is a transgender witch, and she has been through so much within spiritual communities regarding her identity, and it sucks. I mean, that's awful. So I really try to help stamp those things out whenever I see them.
Yeah, it sucks and it's awful, because I think particularly when we're talking about spiritual communities, people are coming for a sense of community, for a sense of belonging, for a sense of, well, oftentimes seeking some kind of solace when something in the world has let them down, something in the quote unquote real world has been a challenge, you know. A lot of people come to a spiritual path seeking support and assistance with that. So to come to a space when you're then not made to feel welcome, even if it's unintentionally, as I can imagine sometimes it is, that's doubly painful, I should imagine. Is that something you've experienced yourself?
I guess I've experienced it in some ways. I've experienced a lot of rejection about my spirituality. And that's always been a bummer. My family, they were really evangelical Christian and Catholic. They kind of vacillated between the two, and it just really, it never felt right to me. I always felt called to witchcraft. And once my dad actually found my books on witchcraft and burned them in the fire pit. and I think I just kind of know firsthand what it's like to be rejected and to feel unwelcome just for being yourself and being who you are and what following a path that rings true to you. And I know how much that feeling sucks. And I know how important it is to stay true to yourself no matter what. So I try to create those help create and cultivate those safe spaces for people.
That's such an intense story to have your father burn your books on witchcraft. Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. He burned my Harry Potter books too, because he said they promoted witchcraft.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So yeah, I'm curious how you found the courage, I suppose, to continue investigating a path that obviously felt true to you, even in the face of such an unwillingness to accept that part of you from your family.
I think that probably goes back to all those planets in the sixth house, all that Capricorn energy. I've always just been kind of a person who follows her heart no matter what, because I guess early on in life and just in general, I really found out that my family didn't really have my best interests at heart, and I didn't have the kind of support I needed. And I learned really quickly that if I was going to make it, I had to show up for myself and really be my own family and follow my own path and be true to myself, and that was going to see me through. So when my dad burned my books, I bought new ones and I kept practicing in secret, and and then when I was 18, I got my own apartment and I was a witch like out in the open, and it felt really good.
I love it. I was a fully fledged witch from from birth, evidently. Fully out as a witch from the age of 18, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't come out on Instagram though. I didn't really share a lot of that part of my life, I guess, until about a year ago. I don't really know why. I just know there's so much stigma associated with it, and I think I didn't feel ready to address it with everyone, but it feels really good being out about it now.
About the witchcraft element, you mean?
Yeah.
Which is interesting, actually. I guess coming from numinous land, mm-hmm. you know, it's a conversation that's very kind of, it's very present and people mm-hmm. are very out about it. And it still sometimes surprises me how the rest of the world isn't really catching up, especially as you say, you know, you mentioned Harry Potter, which I actually read recently for the first time because I realized that I'm older than millennial, and I realized that a lot of my readers had grown up with Harry Potter as mm-hmm. kind of like almost an intro to this idea of a spiritual, magical world that we inhabit. And I realized mm-hmm. how important it had been for so many of my readers. I felt like I should read it. It's interesting, isn't it, that even with such a huge commercial project or such as Harry Potter, mm-hmm. drawing attention to witchcraft and it being a positive thing to connect with this magical side of ourselves, that there's still so much stigma around it. And I wonder if you have any theories or thoughts about why it's still so stigmatized to use the label or the term witch and apply it to yourself.
I think it's twofold. I think it's really entrenched Christian ideology in society. I think, you're expected to be Christian almost. It's very, it's hard to separate Christianity from some sort of like moral code. You know, we're just kind of, a lot of us grew up with that. And I think that's where a lot of my sort of shame almost at first that I had to unlearn about witchcraft came from. Being told that I was demonic and I was following the devil and I was evil and all this stuff, you know. I think having to unlearn that and really just find my truth was hard. Oh, and then just, you know, growing up with Disney, growing up with like storybooks and everything, just hearing, just seeing witches portrayed as these evil, ugly old hags, you know, they just are always out to be nefarious and awful. And I think having to unlearn that sort of witch archetype too, that we all grew up with, is important to really becoming someone who's comfortable with witchcraft.
Absolutely. And I think the two things you mentioned, the sort of overall kind of insidious Christian values very much mm-hmm. infusing our Western society. And then Disney sort of being a reflection of that in a way that it's been instilled in kids from a very early age, like the meaning of good and bad, for example. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting you mentioned about Christianity, because it's not something I grew up with in my household. Mm-hmm. And yet it still was the overriding kind of religious or spiritual ideology that was in the background of my life and pretty much the only reference to anything to do with spirituality that I had growing up. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're right. It's absolutely so deeply, deeply ingrained. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more. You mentioned as well that you had found specifically a lot of trans exclusionary and ableist ideology within some witchcraft circles that you mm-hmm. had joined on social media and sort of found as a way to investigate this part of yourself. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could, just for anybody out there who might be leading circles, hosting groups, who may be unconsciously or may have some kind of a blind spot even around some things that may not be so helpful or inclusionary, how can that sometimes show up to people who are coming into groups that aren't necessarily as inclusive as they could be?
Totally. So you know, as far as trans misogyny goes, I see a lot of people praising the Yanni in a way that's trans exclusionary, and denying that trans people can have a divine feminine energy inherently. And that's really harmful. I have friends who've experienced that personally. So that's one way, just acknowledging that trans people are whatever gender they identify as, and that gender is valid and they can have that sort of divine feminine energy if that's what you believe. So just being inclusive of that is really important.
That's a really good point. Yes, because it's something which is, on the one hand, it's great that we're able to talk more openly and freely about our vaginas. Mm-hmm. But then in a setting, in certain settings, I can completely see now how that can be exclusionary to certain individuals from feeling like they can participate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think anytime you kind of put a sort of divine spin on just basic biology, you're kind of getting into dangerous waters. I'm infertile too, and I see a lot of talk about that. Kind of gets into ableism too. There's a lot of talk about divinity being correlated with childbirth and all this stuff, and it just kind of makes you feel different, or like you're not as divine. I think that's a concept too that a lot of spiritual gurus kind of exploit to sell vitamins and, you know, all these things, correlating health with divinity. I think that's kind of awful. I was born with a bone disease. I didn't know it until, you know, a couple years ago, but I was born diseased, and I'm neurodivergent too. So I will never fit society's definition of healthy, and that doesn't mean that I can't be holy or divine or vibe high. And I think I see a lot of talk about, you know, just correlating health with divinity, and it's a bummer. And that's something you should really avoid if you want to make disabled people and chronically ill people feel comfortable in your spiritual circle.
It's such a hugely important piece, and thank you so much for voicing it, because it's just not something that's really discussed at all. And it, in a way, like the numinous often gets described as or kind of lumped in with like the wellness scene and described as a wellness platform. And that never really sits quite easy with me. And I hadn't really, I think, been able to pinpoint exactly why. I will say things like, oh, what I'm talking about is more about an overall sense or feeling of well-being. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about feeling your most vibrant self. And yeah. I've been sort of like pulled to step away specifically from it being about wellness. And I think maybe what you're voicing now is one of the reasons I've been uncomfortable with using that word for my platform, because you're right. Like, wellness is not a commodity. It's not something that you can mm-hmm. buy, and it's not something that necessarily everyone can have access to.
Totally.
So yeah, thank you again for pointing that out. Can you give again like some specific examples of how you see that being played out in wellness communities, in spiritual communities, and just kind of generally in the languaging that can exist around in this world?
Yeah, I think it really is just kind of the kind of language they use. People say that, you know, there's a lot of ideology floating around saying that the healthier you are, the holier you are. I just think that that's ridiculous. I mean, that's so ableist. I mean, let's see, what else kind of, I'm trying to think of what else, like, specifics people say, but I've seen a lot of spiritual people try to, like, sell their teas and sell their vitamins and everything and pass them off as something that'll get you to a more spiritual place because it'll make you healthier. And while I totally think that teas and everything, certain teas and infusions and elixirs can be beneficial, I don't think that correlating it specifically with health is the way to go.
A really important point. Thank you. And you described yourself as neurodivergent. Can you explain what you mean by that? It's not a term I'm particularly familiar with, and I'd love to be educated on that piece.
Oh, sure. Neurodivergence is just my brain works differently than other people's. Neurodiversity, I'm autistic, basically. So it's neurodivergence is used to describe anyone with a sort of brain that's wired differently than other people's or most people's.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for explaining that. I sort of feel like if you don't know about something, then ask, and that's how we're all going to become more aware of each other's differing experiences of the world, right? So mm-hmm. thanks for being really clear on it. I'm curious how and if you feel like your brain, your beautiful individual brain, interacts with what it means to be a spiritual being. Like, what does it mean to be, for you, with your brain, to be a spiritual being or to have a connection to the divine? I'd love to hear about your experience of embodying your spirituality.
Actually, I kind of get my witchy manifesto from Carl Sagan. He said that we're the universe made manifest to know itself. And while I don't think he intended that to be taken from like a witchy point of view, I do. I think that we are the universe, the universal energy manifested, having a physical experience in this reality.
Beautiful. And what are some of your sort of spiritual practices? What are some of your earthly or kind of embodied ways of experiencing that in your life?
I do tarot every day. I practice a few different kinds of divination. Mm-hmm. I use them as self-empowerment tools, usually, rather than to like predict the future necessarily. But I read tea leaves. I'm kind of starting to get into palmistry. Yeah, and I practice tarot. I'm really into crystals. I have so many crystals, and I have different ones scattered around the house for various purposes strategically. I keep them in my purse, and I meditate with them daily. Certain ones to, you know, invoke certain emotions or moods, you know, depending on what I need that day. So crystals are a really big part of my witchcraft. I also do spells, just spells, like really self-empowering ones, ones to help me, you know, to calm down if I'm feeling anxious, or to give me courage if I have something big coming up that I'm nervous about. So
I'm curious about, I've never had my tea leaves read. And I'm curious about how you learned about reading tea leaves. That's something I'd quite like to look into.
I just Googled. I just looked up a bunch of different sources about how to do it and what the symbols mean. And there's so many conflicting sources about what the correct way is to read tea leaves. And I just kind of picked up the bits and pieces that rang true with me and ignored the parts that didn't.
I think that's really interesting, because actually it's such an honest answer. Like, that's how I find out about a ton of stuff. And like, we have this amazing resource, the internet /Google, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you made a really important point, which is, how do we know what's the right information, the correct information? Well, for me, and I, from what you were saying as well, I think it's possibly similar for you. It's really about working first on my connection with myself and my own intuition, mm-hmm. and then applying that to whatever information I'm able to receive from the outside, mm-hmm. and taking what works for me and trusting that what works for me is the right way for me to be doing it. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Totally. I have a really strong intuition, and I always follow my gut. I've learned that ignoring it is not a good thing. Whenever I'm presented with like a different way of doing something spiritually or a different spell, or I always just kind of run it by my intuition and go with it based on that.
How does your intuition speak to you? I've come down to a very simple kind of like Mercury and Aries, quite practical to the point explanation for me, it just feels like the truth. Mm. Like, I know if I'm telling a lie, and I know what it feels like if I'm telling a lie, and I know what it feels like if I'm telling the truth. So my intuition just feels like the truth. How does your intuition speak to you? Because I know everybody hears or feels or understands their intuition in a different way.
I just feel, when I'm intuitively called to something, I just feel this like passionate like urge to explore it, I guess. And if that's not there, then I know it's not for me.
Ooh, I love that. That makes it sound really sexy. It's like, if I desire something strongly, then it's a yes.
Yeah, it's kind of what it is. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear a bit more about some of the kind of the teachers that you found on your path whose work has been really resonant with you, and who you think is people who you think are creating really inclusive communities or conversations around spirituality that are welcoming for all different kinds of people and all different identities.
I'd love to say that I found a bunch, but I really haven't. I haven't explored that much. I've tried out a few Facebook groups, you know, things like that. And I've just been so disappointed in my experiences with them, that I haven't really pursued things further. But I've kind of been mostly a solitary witch for quite a while, especially because a lot of witchy circles I found, covens and things like that, they're very deity based and religious. And personally, I'm not religious and I don't recognize any deities in my practice. So I kind of automatically feel a little bit unwelcome in those circles a lot of the time. I kind of take a more modern view of witchcraft than a lot of people do. I find a lot of sources to be very archaic or heavy, and that's not really what I'm into. So I absolutely adore the numinous. That's probably my favorite witchy source for commiseration and information. And I think I love how modern it is. I love how fresh it is. It's it's unencumbered, you know, it's just very easy to understand. And I also like the Hood Witch, her Instagram, she has a site. It's great too. Yeah. It's very modern and very straightforward, which I appreciate.
Yeah, Brie is fab. I really, really love her stuff as well. And thank you for like reflecting back to me actually that my intention for the numinous is being received in the world in the way that I talk about it. And I'd love as well to invite you to come check out Moon Club as a guest, because actually one of the reasons I set up Moon Club with my co-founder Alexandra is for exactly the reasons you spoke about. Coming from a non-religious background and not particularly having any specific deities or belief systems in my background, in my heritage, in my lineage, I felt not necessarily so much unwelcome, but I felt like a bit of an imposter in some groups that kind of focus more on those more kind of those sort of like lengthier traditions, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And so for me, moon work is so universal, and yet to me speaks to and everything that I kind of believe about, you know, our cyclical nature, the connection that we have with the earth, and all of mm-hmm. it really speaks to what I perceive to be my spiritual path, I suppose. And Alexandra and I talk about this often, you know, when we talk about creating rituals around the moon, we will never say you have to have this crystal, you have to have this deity on your altar. You don't even have to have an altar, like make it yours. Mm-hmm. And that's what counts. What will make it magical is the intention that you bring to it.
Yes. Yes. That sounds amazing.
So yeah, please.
Such a great mission.
Come be a guest in Moon Club. I think you will.
Oh, I'd love to.
So I'd love to speak to you a little bit more about your mission with fat positivity as well. I love mm-hmm. speaking to anybody who will happily reclaim the F word. I once interviewed Jessamine Stanley. Are you familiar with Jessamine Stanley?
Not offhand, no.
She was one of the real sort of leading spearhead figures in the fat yoga kind of movement, I suppose. It was a few years ago. There was a lot of conversation around how the yoga community was certainly not at all inclusive in terms of size, of race, all sorts of, you know, different intersections, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And I remember I interviewed her and she said to me, you know, fat is just an adjective, mm-hmm. and it's the meaning that we bring to that word that can make it offensive. Mm-hmm. And it just really struck with me. It was one of those like, oh, that's so correct, you know. So can you tell me a little bit more about your, specifically your fat positive work and what your mission is in that space?
Yeah, definitely. I've been fat my whole life. I mean, I've always been very overweight, and I have PCOS too, which doesn't help. I was diagnosed when I was 9 years old, and that's associated with weight gain and everything. And I've been on different mental health medications my whole life, starting when I was about 8 or 9, that affect your weight. And I've just always been fat, and I've been bullied for it my whole life. I'd always been called fat, called a hippo, called, you know, kids are cruel when you're different, you know? So, part of reclaiming the word fat for me was really just kind of owning it, you know, like I'm fat, but so what, you know, like I'm fat, but that doesn't mean that I'm not valuable, that I'm not beautiful, that there's no size limit on beauty. And I think that's really important. I used to absolutely hate my body. I was bullied so cruelly. But really, reclaiming the word fat was a really big step in my body positivity. People can't hurt me with it anymore, you know? Like when you own that sort of a word that you were tormented with for so long, it's a really powerful thing. It's a really powerful feeling and emotion to really say that you can't hurt me with that anymore.
Yes, I love that. It's so true. But I can imagine it takes a lot of work to get to that point, to that place as well, if it's been something that's been so laden with pain for you, to be able to not allow yourself to be triggered by it anymore. Were there any specific practices or any any sort of like teachers or any tools that helped you to overcome that and to reclaim that word?
Beth Ditto, she was always a huge role model of mine. She's like this amazing fierce fat punk rocker. And I grew up like seeing her in magazines and stuff. And I just thought she was the coolest. She was like my size and she was so unapologetic about it. And she still is. And I just adore her. So she was kind of my one like fat role model. And as far as steps I took to kind of get to become the body positive person I am today, fat positive person I am, I think learning to conscientiously like compliment myself and stop bullying myself was the biggest step that really had a huge impact. I just kind of realized one day that I was my biggest bully. I'd stand in front of the mirror and poke and prod at myself and say like, oh, if only I could lose 10 pounds or, you know, 100 pounds really. I mean, 10, let's be honest, but if only I could lose 100 pounds, I'd find the love of my life and I'd, you know, be so much happier and I could go out and do things. And I really just kind of like was miserable and separated myself from the world for so long just because I didn't feel like I was worthy of existing in it the way that I was. I just felt like I was always in the way, was always a burden. I was always seen as ugly and undesirable. And learning to think about myself in a more positive way by complimenting myself and consciously stopping myself from insulting myself constantly, that made a really big difference.
It's huge. And thank you so much for sharing that. I think just hearing it from you will help other people to realize how often they do it to themselves as well. You know, when you've had it from the outside world, it will only compound it. But the hate that we show ourselves is so damaging as well, potentially.
Yeah, it's true.
You mentioned earlier, and I would love to just like touch on this as well. You mentioned how, you know, you always call BS when you see behavior that's non-inclusive, that feels like it could be damaging, that it feels like it could be harmful. Something I love about your tone, and it's summed up in the handle that you use as well, is that there is this kind of playfulness about you and there's an element of positivity about everything, you know? Your activism doesn't ever come across as aggressive or reverse kind of bullying in a way, you know? And I'd love to hear your tips for kind of calling BS, for speaking up in a way that's kind of helpful versus throwing just more sort of like fuel on the fire, if you know what I mean.
Oh, totally. It's so easy to instinctively, you know, a lot of times our jerk reaction is to get really angry about something that we see. And, you know, I'm not perfect. I've been guilty of that too. But I think just really taking the time to respond to something rather than react to it instinctively is important. I try to address these kind of issues, like intersectional issues, by assuming the person didn't intend anything negative, that it was they were just coming from a place of ignorance and they need to be educated about it, or they need to be given like resources to educate themselves about it if I don't want to personally extend the emotional labor to educate them. So I just really try to be kind about it. And if I can tell that somebody's really just not into it, they're not into learning, they're just kind of there for a fight, I just don't engage because that kind of energy isn't worth my time.
Yeah, because then it can end up you're damaging yourself. If you're wearing yourself out, getting into a fight you're probably not going to get anywhere with, then yeah, it ends up the damage goes back onto you again, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really careful and protective about my energy and who I associate with, the kind of people I hang out with. And I try to make sure that everyone's always like at least open to learning from each other. I have friends from all different walks of life and everything, but the one thing that really keeps us all together is that we're all open to learning from each other. And I think that's like a really positive thing.
Oh, it's huge. And hopefully that's what we're, more and more of us are, the kind of relationship, you know, on a grander scale, that more and more of us are kind of entering into together, mm-hmm. by really choosing to have conscious communications with each other. I mean, what you said resonates really strongly with me. I had an experience earlier this year when my loving, beautiful, numinous community were able to educate me on my own thin privilege, which is not something I'd ever really considered before. And honestly, being schooled on that, having my attention brought to the ways in which I was perpetuating perhaps, you know, some sizist or fat phobic attitudes by talking about diets and things like that. Mm-hmm. It was a huge part of my own healing journey, actually, because I was able to see how whatever kind of like unconscious fat phobic mm-hmm. beliefs I'd been putting out into the world, I'd been equally projecting onto myself. And so, yeah, having it brought out into the light, as uncomfortable it was as it was in the time, has actually been a really huge piece of my own path. So
that's amazing. Yeah. I think that's so great, like that you're open to listening to people and listening to change. And I think that's so important, especially when it comes to things like cultural appropriation. I see that so much in spiritual circles. And I think I've seen so many minorities come forward and call it out, and then they're just met with hostility and anger from the people who are culturally appropriating something. And I think it is really uncomfortable to be called out, and that's okay. I think that's something that you have to go through, kind of, you know. I think in order to grow, I think that when you're being called out, you should just be receptive to it. And honestly, I'm grateful for people who have called me out on things that I've done or said, or my false ideologies, you know. I used to be fat phobic too. I used to I even considered weight loss surgery for a while, things like that. And I'm grateful for people who called me out on my bullshit and helped me grow, because that's made me a better person.
Yes, it really is what it's all about. And it's so interesting. I think that knee-jerk kind of like defensive reaction actually comes from a place of, well, we all want to be perceived as good people. Mm-hmm. And if we're called out on something where we unconsciously have maybe not been as good of a person as we could be, then it can like weirdly conversely come out as like, well, fuck you then, you know, we're so ashamed in a way of being called out on something that we messed up on, or some way that we might have caused somebody pain. So I think mm-hmm. ultimately that knee-jerk reaction can come from a place of, I just want to be a good person, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Be open to it and allow yourself to grow through the discomfort. That's really, mm-hmm. really where the expansion happens. Yeah.
I totally agree.
And this touches on something else I definitely wanted to get into with you. You mentioned when I kind of reached out beforehand saying, what should we talk about? And I love this too. You were like, I'd love to talk about shadow work as mm-hmm. self-care, because you wouldn't necessarily put those two things into the same sentence. Shadow work sounds like it could be very painful, difficult, isolating even. Self-care kind of has this warm, fuzzy like glow around it. Even the words, when I think of the word self-care, I kind of like see them surrounded by like warm, pink, fuzzy light. but I completely agree with you that actually diving into our shadow work, which can be very painful, very mm-hmm. triggering, is also self-care. Can you describe to me what you see as being the connection between those two things?
Sure. I mean, self-care is such a buzzword now. Mm. And you see pictures all the time of, you know, people on Instagram or social media hashtagging self-care, of pictures of, you know, bubble baths and like luxe shopping sprees and things like that. And I think maybe those are parts of self-care that are important, but there are a lot of parts of self-care that aren't as tangible and aren't as like visually great for Instagram, but they're just as important. I think shadow work is so important, really digging through your old traumas and healing yourself and unlearning toxic behaviors and toxic behavior patterns, toxic ideologies or social conditioning. I think this is all essential to becoming a good person, to vibing high, you know, to being like a complete, well-rounded, healthy person, spiritually and emotionally, even psychologically. You really have to dig into your shadow work. And I do this in therapy, but there are also ways that I do it just in my day-to-day life. I journal. Even art, like art is really, it helps me access my shadow self sometimes and really dig into it. I do like abstract expressionism and just kind of go crazy with paint and make these like just really kind of primal pieces. And it really helps me express my shadow self in a healthy way so I can connect to it better in therapy and things like that.
Wow, that sounds awesome. I honestly haven't done any art since like middle school, and I used to love it so much. But I've just never really made the time in my life to kind of pick up a paintbrush. Although it's not, the way you just described it, it sounds as a really primal sort of thing, sounds very appealing actually, and very cathartic.
Mm-hmm. It definitely is. It feels so good to just go crazy on a canvas.
I also love the way you described, actually, because it just having it come up in this conversation made it, it makes so much sense when we think about toxic ideology that we may be kind of enacting, whether consciously or not, or toxic beliefs. Of course, it's self-care to want to detox from those things, or that detoxing from those beliefs, behaviors, thought patterns, conditioning, as you said, will help us to for our full kind of like high vibe capacity to come into its flowering.
Totally. I think it's so crucial to, it's important to self-care in ways that are like emotionally great, in ways that are, you know, physically great, like indulging in fancy skincare, you know, however you want to self-care. But it is so important to dig deeper and realize that we're not just physical beings, you know, we're like emotional, spiritual beings. And we need to nurture those parts of us too, so we can bloom as a complete person and really know who we are and cultivate ourselves as comprehensive people.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, I have my moon in Cancer, and you said there's a lot of Cancer in your chart. And there's, for me, Cancer is the sign of self-care, because it's the idea of just really learning to nurture yourself, you know, in ways that you maybe haven't been nurtured in by other people in your life or by your life circumstances, and being able to self-soothe in that way is very Cancerian, I think. And for me, the most nurturing self-care is always the emotional self-care. I was thinking today around, you know, the idea of which self-care practices make me feel safe, because actually it's when I feel safe that I feel I can most confident. Also, if I'm safe in my body and I'm safe in myself, then I can confidently put stuff out into the world, you know, knowing that I'm safe in my own home, my own body home, I suppose. And I was thinking about, well, the self-care practice that makes me feel the most safe is just having really trusted friends that I can confide in, even if it's only two people in my life. I can completely confide in a sort of, that I can actually detox those thoughts, those negative thoughts and those kind of toxic patterns that kind of come up and are triggered in me by various things, just to have a couple of people to kind of like voice them to in a way of detoxing from them is probably my favorite self-care practice, actually.
Oh, that totally makes sense. I think it's really important that we have people in our lives we can unpack things with, you know, emotional issues, social issues. I think it's really important to have those kind of people there as sounding boards and to give constructive feedback to, definitely.
Absolutely. Yes. People who will still call us out, who are not just going to be there as sponges to soak up whatever we're putting on them, but who will reflect back at us. Hold on a minute. What do you mean by that? Why are you saying that? Like, that's not necessarily true.
Yep. Totally. The world has enough yes men. Be somebody who has an opinion, you know?
Yes, exactly. And somebody who can take an opinion as well.
Yeah, totally.
It's been so, so fab to chat to you. And I really hope that we get to meet IRL at some point in the future.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Well, hopefully you'll get some fab modeling job that brings you to New York and we can make it happen that way.
Oh, that'd be so great.
Speaking of which, to finish up, tell us what's coming up next for you.
Oh gosh, what's coming up next? I just made a poetry collection and I'm working on a second one right now. So that's in the works. Other than that, I'm just kind of writing freelance and enjoying that and kind of seeing where it takes me.
Well, I'll include your handle and links to all your other projects in the podcast notes.
Oh, lovely.
And yeah, like I said, it's just been so great to connect with you today. I knew it would be a really lovely conversation. I think you shared some things that will be really helpful for people in many different areas. So I thank you again for your time.
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for having me. It was such an honor to talk to you.
Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
You too.
Thank you so much for joining this conversation with Minerva and myself. I hope you found the perspective to be enlightening and as helpful as I did. Definitely check out Minerva's work at Spooky Fat Babe, and I'll include a link to her website in the show notes. I'm also going to include the link to the article where I got schooled on my thin privilege, as it provides a very interesting further insight into the all-pervasive issue of fat phobia in our society. That's all from me for this week. I'll see you again soon. This podcast features original music and is edited by alloaudio.com. www.alloaudio.com